Hello, I'm Ken McLeod, Principal Teacher at Unfettered Mind. Our website is an ongoing effort to explain Buddhist practice in a way that is clear and accessible to the Western mind without dumbing it down. If you find these teachings useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Five Elements, Five Dakinis, Part 9.
One of the things I didn't explicitly suggest that you do, but I've noticed some people doing it. Here we are out in nature. You can sit and play with rocks, watch water, feel the sun, bask in the breeze. You can study the elements just by experiencing them. It's a very helpful thing to do. As I said at the beginning of this retreat, this is learning another language. It's a mythic language. It's also a metaphoric language. And in its own way, it's very powerful. One of the themes that I found very useful in both practice and in my life is the theme of balance. And this is certainly some influence from Taoist sources here. One of the things to recognize about balance is that one is never in balance. Things are never in balance. But they can be more or less out of balance. When things are moving in the direction of imbalance, they become progressively more difficult. Requires more and more effort to hold the situation together. So in terms of our practice, if you find in your sitting meditation you're expending more and more effort trying to, maybe you feel like you're expending more and more effort to overcome dullness, well, that indicates that there is some kind of imbalance which you're using that energizing to ignore. It may be you actually need to rest, or it may mean that there's a different kind of effort needed. One of the quotes I have up on Unfettered Mind's website, which somebody said, this is what I try to tell my wife all the time, says, if you're rowing in the wrong direction, rowing harder doesn't help. There are a lot of areas of application for that one. So if you're moving in the direction of imbalance and you're working harder and harder, it's not going to help. You're increasing the imbalance. On the other hand, when you move in the direction of balance, things become easier and easier. They begin to flow. Now, as I said a few moments ago, one is never actually in balance. Instead, what happens is you become more and more adept at detecting imbalances and are able to address them earlier and earlier. So there's more continuity and less huge fluctuation. And it feels like you're doing very little, but a great deal is being accomplished. So we rely on awareness for the detection of imbalance. In particular, in meditation, we have two components of attention. The first, and here I'm using the Mahayana definitions, which are different from the Theravadan definitions. Two components of attention are mindfulness and awareness. Not the big awareness of direct awareness, just awareness. Mindfulness here is defined as being present with the object of attention. So if that's your breath, you're present with the breath. If it's a book, your attention's resting on the book. If it's nature of mind, you're experiencing nature of mind. Mindfulness is the quality that we always start with. And basically, you establish a connection with mindfulness when you're able to rest on the breath for three or more breaths in a row. You've then experienced mindfulness. So it's not some mystical, magical quality. It's a very ordinary quality, just a certain steadiness and attention. The second quality, awareness, is defined as knowing what's going on. And all of you have experienced this in your meditation. Attention becomes steady. And there you are resting, say, with the breath. And at the same time, you're aware of all that other stuff, which is very useful, because it is in that broader awareness that you're able to detect whether things are in balance or not. Am I going to sleep? Am I thinking? Etc. In our practice, we get more and more adept at detecting when we're moving away from clear, stable attention. We can move away in one direction, lapsing into dullness, in the other direction, lapsing into busyness. The five elements allow us to bring a higher level of attention to the whole matter of balance. So here, the steadiness of attention would be like the earth element. Clarity is the water element. Knowing is the fire element. The dynamic quality is the air element. And the indefinable, open quality is the void element. Now, it's not particularly helpful to sit while you're meditating, analyzing the quality of your attention like crazy. It takes you out of the practice, basically. A lot of us have this problem. We sit there and we have this running commentary on how we're doing. Anybody else know that one? Yeah, you're doing fine now. Just keep going. Yeah, good. You're getting a little dull. No, don't follow that thought. No, that's it. Good. It's just thought. We can do the same thing in all areas of our lives. In our relationships. The supportive, nurturing quality, earth, the flow of emotional energy back and forth, water, the passion, interest, etc., fire. The ideals that you aspire to, air, and the space in which all this takes place, void. Yeah. It also applies to work, other activities. It's very interesting to look at projects one's engaged in, either in one's professional or personal life. When they go wrong, it's almost always because one of the elements is out of balance. Yeah. Choke something to death with too much structure. Yeah. Something dies because there's no passion in it. So forth. If you're in leadership roles, this can be very helpful. Something doesn't feel right, tell you what to do. So a wide range of applications here. Yes, Jeffrey.
Yesterday when we were doing those exercises, even though I found them dreadfully boring, I got a lot out of them because I could see all the people that I work with and how they move. And I could see then how to begin to read where they were in the organization and how they were able to function with highly traumatized children, or whether or not they could function.
Mm-hmm.
So I think knowing how people in an organization just physically move, that was a really good guide for me.
Yeah, well, one of my students, some of you know her, Gail, is an expert in using movement to analyze how people function in organizations. It's pretty well died out. The last really proficient practitioner of this is at Claremont, actually. It was something that was developed in the early part of the 20th century, but just seeing how people move, and you can tell exactly how they will function in an organization. So what I'm trying to describe here or convey to you is how you can use this language you've started to learn and use it in conjunction with awareness in order to support the effort to move into greater presence. Because balance is the optimum condition for presence to arise. It's one of the reasons why we emphasize learning how to establish stable, clear attention, because it's out of that that the kind of direct knowing can be recognized. So, this afternoon, I just want to make reference to a meditation that we didn't do, which you may be interested in doing on your own, which will take you into a much deeper understanding and open up how the reactive patterns limit you, and also open up ways of moving in different directions. And this is on page 232, 233, following.
Is that the same for the
paperback? Yes, yeah, fortunately they're the same. And this can be summarized under the three words, escape, die, and turn to light. Or three phrases. Escape, die, and turn to light. It's called the five dakinis, form and emptiness. And here you get to use your imagination. So, as it says here, imagine you are in an earthquake. This is the empty aspect, empty component of the earth reaction. And you come up with a way of escaping. Now, when you first do this, think, can't escape an earthquake, you're doomed. And that informs you of the limitations on your thinking here, what you're capable of imagining. So here you are in the earthquake and the ground is shaking beneath you, maybe it's splitting open. How do you escape? You come up with something. You're going to have to be creative. In other words, you're going to have to step out of your conditioned thinking. So you go through that. And then you go back to the earthquake. And the ground splits open. And you fall into it. And it closes over you, and you die. How's that? You go through that. This is to counteract the tendency that you think you can control everything. It's also to remind you of the inevitable results of reactive patterns. They're parasites, they kill you. Then you go back to the earthquake a third time. And as the ground is shaking and opening up, you imagine light radiating from your earth center. And everything turns to light. And you rest in the light. Then let the jewel form at the earth center. Now, for each reaction, there are the emptiness aspect and the form aspect. The form aspect for earth is imprisonment. Like you are stuck between two rocks, can't move. So you go through the same thing there. You figure out a way to escape. You die, crushed between the rocks, and turn everything to light. And you do the same for water, fire, air, and void. Void's a little difficult because it's closely analogous to the actual death experience. Now, this is a difficult set of exercises. Do each of these for 2 or 3 days. You may find your relationship with a lot of stuff changes. Some limitations fall away. But you also may recognize the limits of situations more accurately. Usually when we do this, we go through the Dakini meditation up to that point in the Dakini meditation and then move into the escape, die, and turn to light. Do the transformation to the jewel in the earth case and then go on from there. Now, obviously, we didn't have time in the context of this retreat to do all of that. But that would be an additional step. And as I pointed out, doing this opens up the possibility of stepping out of the limited way we think about things now, helps us to recognize the limits, and helps us to know the actual nature, because the actual nature of all of this stuff is that it is simply an arising in mind. That's why we turn it to light in the end. Questions on that? I just wanted to refer and make sure you have, so you have the whole story, so to speak. It's also very useful to pay attention to the elements in your life. Where do you get support? Where do you not have support? A friend of mine is going through quite a difficult period in her life. And she happened to be in town a few weekends ago. And I said, so who are your business advisors? I said, well, other than you, Ken, I don't have anybody. I said, then you got a serious problem. You need to have more sources of advice than just me, because I'm not even an expert in these matters. So it was an indication of where she did not have that aspect of birth element in her life. So earth, as we've talked about many times, has to do with structure, order, routine, foundation of your life, you know, the basics like food and shelter, income, the things that form the basis of life. And you take a look and you see where they are present, where there isn't enough attention on them, or maybe there's too much. Backing up your hard disk is a good earth exercise. I need to do that myself. For water, it's about flow, as we've talked about. In particular, what things in your life do flow, what things in your life don't flow. Near where I live, in Los Angeles, there's a house on a corner, and it has a brick pathway leading through the lawn to the sidewalk, and it ends at where the two sidewalks intersect, and it forms an arrow there. So this pathway is like an arrow leading out of the house. You stand at the vertex of that arrow, and you can just feel all of the energy flowing into you. I can't imagine how anybody is surviving in that house, because it's just this arrow leading all of the energy out. It's a wonderful bit of feng shui. So, where are things flowing in your life that they shouldn't be flowing? Where aren't they flowing that they really need to be flowing? You know? Whether it's flow of information, flow of emotion, flow of income, all of those things. What are you attached to? What are you adverse to? That all comes into order. Same thing with fire. Where is the vitality, the passion, the energy in your life? Dalai Lama likes taking apart watches. He loves that. Done it since he was a kid. Still does it today. Pure enjoyment. Things you do for pure enjoyment, that's fire. Things you get riled up about, that's reactive fire. So take a look at that. Where's fire in your relationships? Or the lack of it? What do you consume? In particular, so I find this very important, where do you consume attention? Yes. Where do you require other people to give you attention? And you consume it. You know, Laurence Olivier was once asked, how do you be a great actor? And he said, look at me. That's what makes an actor great. You look at them, and you can't help looking at them. They consume your attention. They're adept at it. They're expert at it. Politicians, if they're any good, do the same thing. So what consumes your attention? What do you like to learn, explore and learn more about? What do you not want to learn more about? Where is there too much fire? Where are you getting burned? Where is there too little? Things are dying out. For me, with projects, it's always the beginning of the projects that I'm interested in. I love starting things. Once they're started, I totally lose interest in them. Somebody else can run them, not interested. But I love, you know, okay, how do you put it together? Okay, we put that here. Okay, I can see how to do it. I'll forget that. I'll go on to something else. That's why I can only teach something two or three times. After that, I'm completely bored with it. No. You want to be a good teacher, you can teach it over and over and over again. I can't do that. How is it for you? Some people just love running things. They hate starting them. But they love running things. All those differences.
You can be a good teacher, but you're boring.
Air. Where does air manifest in your interactions with people? Well, they're the people you like to sit down and brainstorm, get the ideas flying around. May not get anything done, but it sure is interesting. Water connects through emotion.
Water? You want air?
I am on air. I'm going to go. Water connects through emotion. Earth connects through support. Fire connects through passion. Air connects through problem solving, understanding something. Anybody remember Beyond the Fringe? Yeah, the British comedy group. One of their routines was about the philosopher at this interview. I think Russell or somebody going to see E.G. Moore. And it goes like, so I went to see E.G. Moore and I saw that he had a basket beside his chair with apples in it. So I said to him, Moore, do you have some apples in that basket? And he said, no. So I paused and I said, Moore, do you have any apples in that basket? And he said, no. Thus leaving me in a logical plastic from which there was only one recourse. Moore, I said, do you have apples in that basket? Yes, he said. And from then on, we were the best of friends. A philosopher's discussion. Connecting through understanding. Don't worry about it. No deep significance there. Don't bother with that one, no. On this subject, who plays intellectual games with you so you never feel any sense of connection? A rush of fingers. And then void. Where is there space in your life? One of the things that it's taken me a long time to learn, but I actually do it now, is I space things out in my day. I space things out in my day. So I very, very rarely have two meetings back to back. It makes a tremendous difference. I can have actually quite full days and never feel rushed. Another thing which I've learned to do and which I advise people, particularly if they're in high-pressure jobs where unexpected things happen all the time, is schedule unscheduled time. That way you always have time for something if it comes up unexpectedly. This is also good for one's personal life. There's a person I used to work with who's had something on his social calendar every night of the week. It's how his partner liked to live his life, and my client was just being run into the ground. So I said, okay, take out your calendar. Get a red magic marker, please. And I want you to put an X through two nights of every week. He went, I can't do that. I said, yes, you can. You simply take your hand and you go like this. He went, But what if somebody calls? You tell them you're busy. You are. You're busy doing nothing that night. He said it made all the difference. So, scheduling time where there is nothing in our lives. It's very, very important. You know, meditation time is a time when there's nothing in our lives. I've started to work with a group of people in their 20s and early 30s. And, what do you produce when you're meditating? Nothing. You produce absolutely nothing when you practice meditation. So in terms of a life and a culture and a society which is bent on being productive, meditation is a complete waste of time. It produces absolutely nothing. For this reason, it is impossible to reconcile meditation with a productive life. And if you try to squeeze meditation into your life, it will be squeezed out because it is not productive. The only way that you have a meditation practice is if you say to yourself, I want this time to do nothing. And you make it a priority along with everything else in your life. Nothing else works. But if you approach meditation from the idea of being more productive, wave goodbye to your meditation practice. So we need space in our lives, because if our lives are full, nothing new can come in. It's as simple as that. In relationship, you need space. If you're a guest, your host needs space. A good guest knows how to get lost for periods of time. So there isn't a constant demand on the host. So study void. Void is what makes everything possible. If there is no emptiness or open space in your life, then very, very few things are possible. Okay. So I've tried to give you an overview here over these 4 or 5 days. We've covered an awful lot of material. I think it's quite good. But I think you probably appreciate at this point that this is really just a start. The extent to which you explore this is up to you. Like most systems of practice in Buddhism, they can be taken to any depth that you want. The more fully you form a relationship with the Dakinis, the more fully you're forming a relationship with your own mind, including the awake aspects of it, such as the 5 aspects of pristine awareness. My responsibility has been to introduce these tools to you, hopefully to the extent that you have some experiential flavor of them. Now they're yours, now you do with them what you wish. Any questions? Peter.
On the void, I'm assuming that it connects with is space, is that?
Yeah. It connects through space. You give another person space, they give you space, that's a form of connection. Any other questions? Yes?
If we get stuck in our practices, we can email you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm pretty easy to track down. Yeah. You can email, or if you really want to talk about something, then give me a call. We'll set up a time. That's always possible. Any other questions?
After an intense period like this of a long retreat, does your practice become easier? more difficult? Or are you, is there a pattern that forms after a retreat?
What are you concerned about, Jiaqi?
Oh, just getting lost in the woods, I guess.
Anything I say would be irrelevant. Are you going to go back? You'll either continue your practice or not. Anything I say will be somewhat inconsequential. Mary.
After 4 of us leave, you're going to give us some warnings. Now, I know we can listen on the podcast, but could you give us the major warnings? The top
The top two, yes. Here we've been working with a sustained practice over a period of few days. There's been a pool of energy we've been working with, which is one of the benefits of group practice, because we contribute to that pool and then we can draw on that pool so that each of us are able to make efforts greater than we would normally be able to make individually. Consequence of that, and of living in this relatively high energy environment for a few days, things have soaked in a little deeper. Some of you have very definitely felt or got in touch with things that you may have known about but you didn't really want to touch, and now they're up in your face and you can't do much about them. As a consequence, your physical coordination and your level of reactivity may be a little heightened over the next few days. That is because old stuff is emerging. You may find your physical coordination a little different, so be careful driving, things like that. But in particular, this is the most pertinent one, try to have a little space in your life, because when you leave this environment, that energy will decay, and in the absence of mindfulness, which we always forget from time to time, it decays into the reactive patterns. So you may find yourself a little more reactive, possibly. So just watch for that. Usually you're going home to friends and loved ones, and they think, oh, they'll be going to be so nice and peaceful from the retreat, and you walk in and you just hit the roof about something totally inconsequential. It happens. The other thing is, we've been practicing the Qigong. George prepared booklets, so it's very good to keep the Qigong going as part of your practice. But as George may have already mentioned, if you make the Qigong part of your practice, then keep it going on a regular basis. It's not good to stop and start Qigong. It's like turning water on and off on a pipe. It routes the pipes and eventually causes problems. Even after this retreat, probably do Qigong for 2 or 3 days. So it's not just doing it once a day. So it isn't just a sudden stop. But I do recommend that you make the Qigong part of your practice, and at the end of your regular practice session, you do it 6 or 9 repetitions, not just the 3. We only do it 3 after each because we do it several times during the day. But normally it's 12 repetitions. So, and it's very, very helpful because it balances energy in the body.
So at one time?
Yeah.
Do how many times?
You can start with 6, work it up to 9 or even 12 if you wish.
Okay.
If you start feeling spacey, don't take it any further.
Can you split that up? Do 6 in the morning and 6 at night?
You can. And if you really want to be energy, you can do 12 in the morning, 12 at night. Don't do it
right
after
before bed. You'll be up all night.
I was saying don't do it after supper. Do it, 6. Yeah, don't do it after 6 or 7 o'clock. That's George says. You may end up a little more energy than you wanted. This particular set of exercises and the corresponding sitting 8 pieces of rocade, which is another set, were designed by a Chinese general to refresh his troops at after long marches. That's where they started from. But we use them, and they can be used for training energy for martial purposes. We use them for balancing techniques. They work very well. Okay? Let's turn to prayers then.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.com. at unfetteredmind.org.